Where were you when the world stopped turning on that September day? Were you in the yard with your wife?
I was in my car in Northeast Georgia in a little community called Raven Gap. Mike Flavin joins us now. He is a pastor at New Providence Presbyterian Church in New Providence, New Jersey. Mike, welcome to Mornings with Carmen. And where were you on that September morning?
Good morning, Carmen. It's great to be with you. We're on all the commuter lines into Manhattan, and I was driving. It was a perfect sunshiny morning. I was driving to church, listening to the radio. And I remember at first, I mean, of course, confusion, but I even remember the disc jockey I was listening to was kind of making a joke out of it. Like, you know, because who could believe in it? They didn't know. And by the time I got to church, it was no joke. And I remember walking in and the pervading thought initially and throughout the morning was the whole world changes now. You know, it was, and of course that was true.
So 20 years ago, you know, there was a generation of teenagers, there were a generation of kids. You had a child at the time. Give people a little point in time glimpse into your family 20 years ago so that we can understand, you know, then the conversation that we're going to have about your engagement with teenagers in your community.
Right. Yeah. I'm a 40-year youth pastor. And, you know, as you mentioned, I've been at this church in youth ministry for 30 years. And at that time, Amy, my wife, and I had two young teens. Watching what impact that had on them and then the students I work with, immediately that week and beyond and all the way up into today, one of the real memories I have is, you know, how the school handled the emergency of the moment. They went into lockdown, no information in, no information out, really, because a lot of those kids' fathers were in the World Trade Center, you know, and I had left that morning. And throughout the day, that was true. We kept getting reports, you know, this parent was found, this parent's safe. And that night, students and really families and others instinctively came to the church. Our church is the center of town, in the center of a graveyard, almost 300 years old. So we are like the center of town. And people streamed in there. And then one by one, I watched reunions that night as dads or moms walked in and kids ran down the sanctuary aisle and jumped into their arms. And there were a few that didn't come home.
As you take us to that moment, I'm sure that others are moved like I am, because the fact that the fact that Christ has had a worshiping congregation on that corner in New Providence, New Jersey for 300 years is a testimony. The fact that, like many churches in the Northeast, your church sits in the middle of a graveyard in the middle of town, and that it is the instinctive place that people go. That is not the world a lot of people live in across the country. And it was different, not only on that day, but it was different in that week and in that month and in the weeks that followed. People did instinctively turn toward one another and toward the church. Mike, tell us about the graffiti boards. Because this particular event and image is so rich, and I think that it's so helpful in terms of the way that you engage students in your community, and it's a witness and testimony to others.
Sure. Yeah. You know, one of the interesting things is I'm not originally from New Jersey. I've been here 30 years, but I grew up in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, And I know a lot of your stations are in the Midwest, and you know, New Jersey is a whole different culture. There are more teenagers per square mile right here where I am than anywhere in the country. And there's the least amount of youth ministry. It still is confusing to me after being here 30 years. That said, there is a hunger, you know, and there is a draw. Like half my students, they don't even consider us their home church. They're either unchurched or whatever the case may be. And yet there's a real hunger for truth and for connection and the rest. So just before, like in the year 2000, so it was about a year before 9/11, I decided to just stop doing youth group. And we put all our eggs in small group ministry, and it just really flourished. Like students to this day are starving for real connection, safe place to be honest, to find Christ, to grow deep in Him. And at the same time, I started the opposite. I started a multi-venue entertainment center. Like I think, Carmen, you're in Nashville, and I was always very intrigued by Rocket Town. Like mm-hmm. You know, I mean, a big fan. And we didn't start that, but kinda. And we had been running it for about a year, and we had gotten up around 400 or 500 students every time we opened, paying money to get into the church. And it was a multi-venue entertainment center. And so we were getting ready to open for the season in September, that Friday, the Friday after 9/11. And 9/11 hits, and we were set to open, and we didn't know what to do. I was getting phone calls from parents screaming at me, like, I understand you're going to open up that party for kids. How dare you? And then I was getting other calls from parents going, please, 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 these kids need a diversion and to get away from what's happening right now. Please open. And so we kind of hit a compromise. We decided to open, not knowing if anybody would come, and for the first hour, keep it very subdued, like chill music. And we have, you know, like every church has kind of this sacred room of antique furniture. And we put tubs of sand and candles and matches in there, which was a bit of a risk. And these big graffiti boards. I've always been in youth ministry a fan of graffiti. I think in like a controlled setting where kids can pour their heart out and other kids can read it. So we put these boards with permanent markers. We prayed. I went to the door, which is in the back of the property, and there's an old fire escape there, and we call it the fire escape. And 650 kids showed up that night. 650. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, we were always getting around 400 or 500, but they were lined up so far I couldn't see the end of the line. And for the next hour, and our capacity was way less than that, so there was a limit. And then when kids left, we let others in. But by the end of the night, it was so powerful. It was just so powerful. And about an hour in, we made an announcement, and we just lit the place up and had kind of a normal night. But those boards I've saved. And one of the families who lost someone in 9/11, for the reception after the memorial service, the family had seen those boards and requested them be put up in the reception of the person we lost. And we brought them out in the 10th year, and we just found them again. They were up in the rafters of our 200-year-old sanctuary. So, you know, I had sent them some pictures to you, Carmen, and for kids to cry out with their pain and for other students to realize they're not alone in their pain is a powerful thing.
We're going to continue our conversation with Pastor Mike Flavin in just a moment. We're talking about his personal experience of 9/11. We're going to talk about, you know, where the community is at now. We'll be right back. Just when you think it might be over. Just when you think the fight is gone. Continuing our conversation with Pastor Mike Flavin, he has been serving a community of believers in New Providence, New Jersey at the New Providence Presbyterian Church. You can find them at The Corner NJ, thecornernj.com. He's been serving there for more than a generation now, and we're talking with him about the particular events of 9/11 20 years ago now, and then we're going to fast forward to what's going on today. So, Mike, it occurs to me that the teenagers who we just talked about are now community leaders and parents themselves. You have shepherded an entire generation of 9/11 babies who have now already passed through youth ministry in the meantime. Talk with us about sort of 9/11 over time where you live, because I observed yesterday with a guest who was in the Twin Towers, you know, and she said, you know, 9/11 is yesterday for me every single day. It's only just yesterday, every single day. And she talked about the PTSD that she lives with and the struggle. I mean, the very, very real struggle over time, and even the struggles that she experiences today. Talk with us about your observations, your experiences, things that we should know, because most of us don't live in communities where 9/11 is just yesterday every day.
Yes. And PTSD is very real. I teach a course in that, and things don't just evaporate. Memories linger and healing happens, but the memory is very real there. One of the things I noticed a few years down the road was how many of my students joined the military. I mean, I've always had a few join the military, but it was very striking to me that there was an uptick in that. You know, there was an ultra patriotism. I mean, the country came together. You could not buy an American flag in North Jersey, where I was, and maybe other places as well. And that was just very noticeable to me. My wife and I have two 30-year-olds now, but I also remember my daughter saying when she was in college, not in the area here, how on 9/11, which is such a subdued, intense day for people that are in the greater New York City area and around the country and in Washington and elsewhere too, but that on her college campus, people just, it was like life as usual. And it will not be life as usual here this Saturday in many ways. And so that was somewhat noticeable. But we, you know, it's still, there's still a rawness there. Millennials grew up in that, with that, reflecting that memory. I've also wondered, and I haven't really thought it through, but to me, watching students struggle with that is a bit reminiscent, I don't even know how to say it, but with what students are wrestling with now in this pandemic, you know, fear, death, and all that goes with that. You opened, Carmen, with a great word about the wages of sin is death, you know, and is the world a safe place to be? Am I going to be all right? You know, one of the things I've said to my students a lot over time is life is short, life is hard. And then I always throw this in, man, life is good, you know, and when you know Christ, life is good. So the struggle with death and darkness and brokenness, that was just accentuated on 9/11. And I think to some degree, it sort of is now, you know.
I think that's a really interesting corollary to make. We're going to talk in the second half of the next hour with Kara Powell about, you know, the three big questions that every teenager is asking, and how we answer those in the culture today, and how so much of that is just being with them, walking with them, as they ask the questions and, you know, and discover the answers. Talk with us about, I mean, you describe yourself as a career youth pastor. I got to tell you, that's like a weird, That's a weird thought for a lot of people. I mean, you're a weird guy. I feel comfortable saying that.
I'm a freak, Carmen. I'm a freak.
I know, but it's such, but such a good freak. So we have like a minute left for you to tell us like what you know and what you've learned and the hope you experience as a career youth pastor. Like, give us a little hope, because we hear such terrible things about the emerging generations.
You know, it was God's call in my life. I mean, he made it very clear. I wasn't in a youth group myself. I grew up in Eden Prairie in suburban Minneapolis, and nice little church, but I had no youth ministry. And I remember coming, I went to Bethel Seminary in St. Paul, and I remember saying to some friends, the one thing I know God's not called me to is youth ministry. And 40 years later, that's all I've known. And I'm grateful for the call. God is up to great things and has been throughout. The code that I finally cracked, which was Jesus' strategy, is small groups. Kids don't need to be entertained. They want to be. So I've built my entire ministry here around same gender, pretty much same grade, small groups. My ministry is a whole bunch of little youth groups with volunteer youth pastors. That was the key. And then with seniors, to put them into ministry, I have this year about a dozen senior interns that they actually get a college scholarship for helping run my ministry. And it's been beautiful. I mean, in fact, here's the crazy thing. This senior pastor of our church here, who's going to be installed this Sunday, was a student in my ministry and a product of this church. So there is hope.
There is hope, and there is an outpost of hope and a light shining on a corner in the middle of town in a little place called New Providence, New Jersey. You can find them at thecornernj.com. You're looking for Pastor Mike Flavin, F-L-A-V-I-N. If you want to know more, I feel confident that if you reach out to him, Mike would love to share more with you. Particularly, I mean, I think people are going to be intrigued. You put seniors in high school into ministry leadership positions, and they get a college scholarship for participating. That is a pretty great idea, as are many of the things that you that you're doing in youth ministry today. So, Mike, thank you for your testimony. Thank you for your faithfulness. Thank you for what's going on that corner. Give Jeff Lee our love as he's installed this coming Sunday. We love to see flourishing churches across the country, and we love to hear from them. So thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Carmen. And say hi to Kara Powell. She is a hero of mine, so that'll be a great segment.
Absolutely. We'll do so. All right. Thank you so much. We got to wrap it right there. We're bringing a close to this hour, but then we'll be right back.